The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Good afternoon to all our listeners. Good afternoon, Base. And I hope everybody had a great weekend. And like you said, happy Mother's Day, even though it's Monday, to all the mothers out there. And, you know, we have another week, so we have more interesting topics coming. And, you know, we are on the verge of, you know, changing around all our policies now. So hopefully health becomes a major priority for Trinidad and Tobago. And yeah, we are here to learn about new topics every week and how to take care of your health. So today's topic is another interesting one that we have discussed very briefly last week. But we're going to go into much more detail because a lot of people have been asking about it in our other topics. But while we are going to be discussing this particular topic, I mean, anybody can feel free to call in, send a WhatsApp about any of your medical questions, and we'll have a conversation surrounding it.
All right. So today we're going to be talking about PR. When I say PR, we're not talking about public relations. So exactly, What is PR?
So PR bleeding is actually poor rectal bleeding. Poor rectal bleeding really refers to that passage of blood through the rectum or the anus, either it's mixed with stool or occurring independently. And a lot of people may be experiencing it and they may not want to talk about it, but really and truly, it is something that everybody needs to know about because people of all ages can experience this. And honestly, it is quite common. It can range from that bright red blood that is seen on toilet paper to darker or tarry stools that we discussed last week when we were talking about upper GI bleeding. Now, it is relatively common, like I said, and it can be associated with both benign conditions like hemorrhoids or even more serious diseases like colorectal cancer. And people of all ages will experience this, but the underlying causes are going to differ depending on the age group and, of course, the risk factors of the person as well. I think one common misconception that we have is that all rectal bleeding is harmless and it's just due to piles or hemorrhoids. Yes, hemorrhoids are very common and they usually are a benign cause of that rectal bleeding. But assuming so without any sort of thorough evaluation, it can definitely delay any sort of critical diagnosis that may actually be occult or hidden. Now, the important thing here is that if you do experience any sort of PR bleeding, you should go and get it evaluated. Your doctor will do a detailed history, a physical exam, and they may even order certain investigations like a DRE or a digital rectal exam or even a sigmoidoscopy or colonoscopy may be necessary to rule out more severe conditions, especially if that bleeding becomes very persistent or it's associated with other very sinister symptoms like weight loss or changes in a person's bowel habits.
All right, and how can someone tell the difference between PR bleeding and other causes of blood in the stool, like from the stomach?
So that PR bleeding or poor rectal bleeding, again, it refers to that passage of blood through the anus itself, and it's either from the mixed with the stool or it is occurring independently. And really and truly, again, the differences that can be seen between the PR bleeding and other causes of blood in the stool really can be from the color of the stool itself. It can be bright red if it is occurring from the rectum itself, or it can even be black and tarry like we see with an upper GI bleed. Because last week when we discussed upper GI bleeding, we were talking about how the blood can be digested and how it really is something that can get people very concerned. So definitely, I would say that the PR bleeding and the differences between that and the blood from other places like the stomach, the color, as well as the consistency, as well as the amount of blood or even the amount of stool that is occurring. And sometimes when people have something like a colorectal cancer, they will have changes in their bowel habits as well.
All right, folks, once again, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Remember, we will be taking some time to take some of your calls on any medical topic, 625-2257, 627-3223, and you could WhatsApp us starting from now at 306-1065. And what are some of the most common causes of PR bleeding in both younger or older adults?
So I would say some of the most common causes of PR bleeding would be things like hemorrhoids. People have already asked about or discussed, and that can actually cause a lot of bright red blood to be in the toilet bowl. So some people will talk about how, you know, they've passed stool, and when they've looked back, they would see a whole set of blood in the toilet bowl. And that could be due to something like hemorrhoids. It could be due to something like diverticulosis, which we have discussed previously as well. And if somebody notices some blood or bright red blood on their toilet paper after wiping, and it can be a small amount, it could be due to something like anal fissures. And that is usually something that we do see when somebody has something like constipation. Now, other more sinister causes would be colorectal cancer, especially when we are looking at the older adult population. And with colorectal cancer, we definitely do see some blood that can either be mixed in with the stool, but most of the time it is very occult, meaning that we may have to even perform a fecal occult blood test to actually see that there has been blood in the stool itself. But it does come with other symptoms as well. So people with colorectal cancer, they may notice changes in their bowel habits. So they may have maybe constipation or diarrhea, and they're not having their usual bowel habits as they would on a daily basis. And what we do find as well is that when there's a tumor that is blocking some part of the colon itself, what can happen is that the shape and the consistency of the stool does change. So we would find in people with colon cancer, they may describe their stool as basically pencil shape, because you're creating some sort of blockage within the colon. And of course, the consistency and shape of the stool is definitely going to change. And yes, though hemorrhoids are very much prevalent across all age groups, any sort of bleeding in the older adults definitely needs to be investigated thoroughly to rule out that malignancy or even more serious GI conditions.
All right, one more question before we head into taking some of your calls. Does the color of the blood give any clues as to where the bleeding might be coming from?
So this is a very good question. And yes, I would say that the color of the blood itself is going to provide some sort. The color of the blood itself is going to provide some sort of vital clue as to where the blood is actually coming from. So that bright red blood is usually indicative of bleeding from the rectum or the lower colon, and that could be due to things like hemorrhoids or the anal fissures that I talked about that people get when they're straining too much from constipation or even rectal polyps. Now, if somebody has maroon colored blood, that actually suggests bleeding from a little higher up in the colon itself. So maybe the right colon. So when people have right-sided colon cancer, their stool may be more maroon colored. And of course, the black or tarry stools, or what we call melena, we talked about that last week, and that will often point to bleeding from the stomach or from the small intestine. However, the color alone is not enough. We do need to have further testing to locate the exact source of that bleeding.
Hi, friends. Let's take some of your calls and your questions. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchtime doctor, friend.
Yes, boy, my blessed doctor. Listen up. So, can PR bleeding be associated with constipation? And what is good for constipation? The fruits and food. Thanks again, listen.
So, yes, PR bleeding can definitely be associated with constipation. And when we do see constipation being associated with that bleeding, again, it may be something as simple as the anal fissures, where people just get a tear in the lining of the rectum or the anus because they are forcing too much because of that constipation. And of course, if you have a tear in your tissue, you are going to get some sort of bleeding. So usually the bleeding is not very severe, and it's really just a few drops of blood that they will notice on the toilet paper after wiping. Now, constipation and PR bleeding can also be a sign of something a little more malignant. Remember, I said colon cancer is something that comes with changes in a person's bowel habits as well. So, of course, a person is going to need a thorough examination to ensure that their bleeding is not due to something like constipation as opposed to a malignant source of that bleeding. But most of the time, most people know when they're constipated, most people know when they have not had enough fiber in their diet, and they know that the cause of that is the cause of the specks of blood is because they have been forcing too much. Now, in to answer your other question in terms of the sort of foods that you should be eating if you're constipation, you want to look at your high fiber fruits. So your prunes, and these are rich in fiber and sorbitol. And this is basically a natural laxative. It has a natural laxative effect. So your apples, your pears, your pawpaw berries, and of course your green leafy vegetables like your spinach and your kale, all of these things are full of fiber and magnesium, and it helps to draw water into the intestine. And of course, your broccoli and your Brussels sprouts and your pumpkin and your carrots, and of course, whole grains, legumes, and the hydrating foods. We tend to gloss over things like your cucumbers and your watermelons. These things are rich in water and fiber, and you need to drink plenty of water as well. This is crucial to help the fiber work effectively and to keep the stool soft. So if you are suffering with constipation, definitely you need to look at what you are consuming on a daily basis. And if you are having any sort of movement in terms of exercise or lack thereof, because having that sort of movement is definitely going to help the bowels move, effectively.
All right, let's get some WhatsApp messages. Remember, folks, send your WhatsApp messages 306-1065. You could also send your messages to Sky 99.5 or Sangeet, and we'll ask them to the doctor live right here in studio. All right, good day, doctor. I got some flea bites on my entire feet and hand. I was recommended to use Trix and Perton. It helped a little, but I still got some itch, and it caused dark marks on my skin. What can you recommend for me to use for the marks?
So some people are just very much prone to post-inflammatory hyperpigmentation. And what I mean by that is that we in the Caribbean, we do have a lot more melanocytes than, say, somebody in the UK, etc. So what tends to happen to our skin is that any sort of trauma or injury is going to cause that particular portion, especially if you were itching the area, to become a lot darker. There are certain home remedies that you can try on your skin, and there are even things that you can buy over the counter in the drugstore that will help to basically reduce that amount of pigmentation. But for some people, it may not fully go away, unfortunately. Maybe try something like vitamin C or vitamin E to rub over the area. You know, there are, of course, prescription medications that you can try as well. I can't say that over the air. But yes, there are just home remedies. Maybe try some aloe vera on the skin, some vitamin E, as well as some vitamin C on the area.
All right, let's get another question here. Hi, Doc Pleasant. Good day. Can you please enlighten me on what Daflon 1,000 milligrams is used to treat, and how long should it be used for? Thank you.
So when we are looking at certain medications, Daflon particularly is really a medication that we would use to treat something like chronic venous insufficiency, which we have talked about previously, or sometimes it may be used to treat hemorrhoids, or sometimes it may even be used to treat lymphedema, or if somebody has a very fragile vascular system. So it really does help to just help the improve the blood and the lymphatic circulation. So it improves your venous return, it helps the lymphatic drainage, it makes it very effective for conditions that involve the poor circulation, or any condition that involves any sort of inflamed blood vessels. There are certain side effects with it, like the gastrointestinal side effects, but most of the time, the benefits of the drug will outweigh the risks that are associated with it. And Daflon is generally safe, but of course, you were prescribed it for a reason, and you need to take it under your doctor's supervision, especially if your symptoms persist or they become worse.
All right, another question here coming from our friends at Sky. Thank you very much. This person says, I had eye surgery 5 weeks ago, and I'm experiencing floaters. I am scared.
So what I would say is that if it is, so people do experience floaters sometimes, but some people, especially after eye surgery, it is something that you still need to take very seriously, even though it may be benign or it may not, it may be nothing out of the ordinary. But I would say to go back to your eye doctor, let them just do an eye exam for you, just to make sure that everything is fine and that there are no complications with the surgery, especially if you've had cataract surgery, etc. The floaters can appear, or they can become a little more noticeable after cataract surgery, because the new lens for you has now become clearer, so it makes any sort of existing floaters more visible. But again, in rare cases, you can have complications, so it's better to be safe than sorry.
All right, folks, we'll stop by and take some of your questions and calls a little later on. We'll get back to our topic, of course, of PR rectal bleeding. All right, so let's see. Is PR bleeding always visible to the naked eye, or can it be hidden?
So with PR bleeding, it can indeed be hidden, or occult, as we like to see. Occult bleeding really is the blood loss that we cannot actually see, but it is occurring, and it does still cause certain symptoms. Like, people are going to experience symptoms of anemia or even fatigue, and this is really usually detected through that test I was talking about earlier, that stool test, the fecal occult blood tests, or even fecal immunochemical tests as well. The occult bleeding, like we just discussed, it may be sign of underlying conditions like colon cancer or even chronic inflammatory bowel disease. And this is why it is very important for persons to have their regular screening checkups. And of course, if you are over 45 or if you have a family history of colorectal cancer, you definitely should be getting your colonoscopies performed. And you should still be getting, I mean, your blood tests, all of these things performed on a yearly basis. But those who are over the age of 45, and if you do have a family history of that colon cancer or a previous history of colon cancer, you definitely need to get yourself screened a little earlier than the average population. And of course, you need to be a little more vigilant when it comes to looking at symptoms.
And are there any symptoms that usually accompany PR bleeding that people should not ignore?
So PR bleeding by itself, it can be a very concerning symptom. But when it is associated with other symptoms like changes in your bowel habits, like having constipation or diarrhea, like I just mentioned, or abdominal pain, unexplained weight loss, or even fatigue alongside the rectal bleeding, these things are definitely red flags. These things actually suggest that there may be more serious conditions like inflammatory bowel disease or colorectal cancer or even diverticular disease that is occurring that that person does not know about. Also, any sort of significant blood loss, and even if it's from diverticulosis or hemorrhoids, any sort of significant blood loss is going to cause some you know, concerning symptoms like dizziness or weakness or even palpitations. Because you're experiencing blood loss, you are going to experience anemia and those signs and symptoms of anemia. And of course, any sort of symptoms that you are experiencing definitely requires prompt and urgent medical evaluation. So we do have patients who will be experiencing PR bleeding for months at a time, and they will not even come and get it evaluated until they get other symptoms, like they've lost about 20 or 30 pounds within the last 2 months, and that has become very concerning for them. And by that time, you know, colon cancer has become stage 3 or even stage 4 in some cases. So if you are starting to experience concerning symptoms like any sort of bleeding through any orifice in the body, it is something that you should go and get evaluated. It is always better to be safe than sorry. Most of the time, it is something very benign. But again, it's always better to be evaluated than complicated.
And who is most at risk for developing PR bleeding? Are there any age groups, habits, or medical conditions that increase the chances?
So like any other symptom or any other disease, we do have to look at specific age groups, at specific risk factors, and of course, people with specific medical conditions that increase their chances of getting or developing a PR bleed. The age group that we usually look at is people over the age of 50, especially those who have never undergone colorectal cancer screening, are definitely at a higher risk. Yes, you can get a PR bleed at any age, but this is a particularly concerning age group that is prone to PR bleeding, especially if they have not had any sort of prior detection for colon cancer. Lifestyle factors, like if somebody has low fiber diets or they have chronic constipation or they have a sedentary lifestyle and they are constantly straining during bowel movements, that will also increase their risk of something like anal fissures and lead and even hemorrhoids. And all of these things can lead to PR bleeding. And then the conditions like like the hemorrhoids, like I just mentioned, or Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, which are both inflammatory bowel diseases, and even diverticulosis. These things predispose individuals to PR bleeding. And of course, a family history of colon cancer or polyps is another key risk factor that we do look at. And of course, these put people in a concerning category, especially if they have presented with a PR bleed.
All right, folks, we're going to take some time to answer some of your questions. I see the calls and WhatsApp messages coming in just a short while. So hold on. 625-2257, 627-3223. WhatsApp us at 306-1065. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangin 106.1, and Sky 99.5. So can diet, chronic constipation, or straining during bowel movements continue to PR bleeding or contribute to PR bleeding?
Absolutely. So like we were just talking about, any sort of diet that is low in fiber and low in fluids can cause your stool to become hard, and that is going to lead to constipation, and that is going to lead to straining, and that is going to lead to tearing of tissues. And that straining actually increases pressure in the veins of the rectum and the anus itself, and that causes or even worsens any sort of existing hemorrhoids, and it will potentially lead to those anal fissures or tear in the tissue. And these are really among the most common causes that we do see of PR bleeding. So these same things that I just mentioned, increasing your fiber intake, whether it be through your fruits like your plums or your foods like your green leafy vegetables, your broccoli, and of course, increasing your hydration as well, and maintaining those regular bowel habits, as well as exercising on a daily basis, because I think we tend to neglect exercise when we talk about constipation or any sort of GI disease, but it really does help with the mobility of your GI tract. And it significantly does help to reduce your risk of developing any of these diseases like hemorrhoids or an anal fissure, which will contribute to a PR bleed.
Before we take our questions, when should someone with PR bleeding go straight to the doctor or even the emergency room?
So this is a very important question. And this is something that everybody should know about. Any sort of rectal bleeding that is heavy, meaning that the bleeding is soaking through the toilet paper or it's dripping into the toilet, and it's associated with dizziness, fainting, a rapid heartbeat, all of these things need to be treated as an emergency. Additionally, if that bleeding persists for more than a few days at a time, and it is accompanied by other symptoms, like the person is experiencing abdominal pain or changes in their bowel habits or significant weight loss or even night sweats, medical attention is definitely and urgently warranted so that we can rule out something like cancer or inflammatory bowel disease.
All right, so let's take our questions. 627-3223, 625-2257, Lunchtime Doctor. Let's go with the WhatsApp, Susan. Let's go with the call first. Hello, good afternoon.
Please, thanks again. So, Doc, my name is Russian Research, to ask the question. He's type 2 diabetic, right? And he uses berberine. Does he still have to use metformin, because he gets real good numbers? He's confused. I tell him, well, don't use it. So use the doctor. Let's go. Thanks a lot.
So if he was prescribed the metformin, I would say to use the metformin over the berberine right now. What he can do is go back to his original doctor. Let them know what his blood sugar readings are, because I'm sure that he has been taking his blood sugar readings with the berberine and with the metformin. And for people who are well-controlled diabetics, and what I mean by that is that their diet and their exercise is on point, sometimes they may not even need a high dose of metformin. They may not need to take it twice a day. They may just need to take it once a day. And even the berberine can help to, it can help to basically stabilize the blood sugar as well. I would not say to take the berberine and stop your metformin, because you never know, you know, when your blood sugar can shoot back up, and you may not even know if you're not taking that blood sugar reading. But take the metformin over the berberine. I do agree that berberine does help, but you need to consult your doctor before stopping that metformin. I don't know this person's reading, so I can't give the advice over the air.
All right, another question. Good day, Doc. I am 73 years and recent blood work results. Creatinine 1.07 and my EGFR 74. Advice, please.
So this is essentially a person's kidney function test. And your creatinine of 1.07 is within normal range. So that is very good. That suggests that you have normal kidney function. And your EGFR is 74. Now, the ideal threshold is 90, but it really is just saying that you have a mildly reduced kidney function. And there's no immediate life-threatening concern, but it may suggest that you have a mildly reduced kidney filtering capacity, which as you get older does happen, and it could be normal for your age. So really and truly, I would say to stay a little more hydrated, make sure that your blood pressure is under control, and you know, make sure that you are consuming a healthy diet, which is rich in your omega-3 fatty acids, rich in your whole grains and your whole foods, and just increase your hydration as well. It's not anything that is very concerning. In fact, as you get older, sometimes your kidney function or your kidney filtering capacity may go down just a little bit.
All right, good afternoon, Doctor. Can you explain what causes high ESR figures and what can be done to bring it down?
So when we are looking at your ESR figures, that essentially is an erythrocyte sedimentation rate. And it is one of the non-specific markers of inflammation. Essentially, what it measures is how quickly those red blood cells that is in your blood settle at the bottom of a test tube. And normally what will happen is that the red blood cells settle slowly. Now, when somebody has any sort of inflammation, then you have proteins like fibrinogen that cause them to clump up and settle a lot faster. So if you have a high ESR, that means that you have more inflammation in the body. And we usually see that in chronic inflammatory conditions. So things like rheumatoid arthritis, or even certain infections or bacterial infections, even certain autoimmune diseases like sarcoidosis, or even in some cancers or kidney disease. So any sort of inflammation in the body can send your ESR high. So what I would say is, what is the underlying cause of this high ESR? Because everything or every underlying cause is going to have a different mode or management. So if it is an autoimmune condition, say something like rheumatoid arthritis, there are specific medications that these people will have to take, DMARDs and certain steroids, etc., to reduce inflammation throughout the body. If it's cancers, then we have to look at what type of cancer it is and treat that underlying cause. If it's an infection, then we would have to look at IV antibiotics. And in addition to that, we have to look at ways in the lifestyle that we can reduce inflammation. And, you know, one of the most important things that we always tell people is omega-3 fatty acids. It's very anti-inflammatory. And of course, your antioxidants are from your foods and your fortified fruits, your vegetables, all of these things as well. your diet and your exercise is going to become very important when we are looking at treating any sort of inflammation in the body. So unfortunately, for things like rheumatoid arthritis or things like infections, you can't just diet and exercise it away. You have to have the actual medical management, and then your diet and your exercise becomes a supplement to that.
All right, final question now. I have glaucoma and cataracts. I got 4 injections in my eyes about 2 months ago, and now I cannot see in that eye. Is it because of that injection?
So really and truly, the injections are supposed to help to slow the progression of the cataracts. And when you're talking about injections, I personally don't think that, you know, the injections, like the intraocular injections that they may be doing, it may only be used if it's something like retinal swelling, or even steroid injections may be used if they're thinking something a little more inflammatory. Not really a first line or a routine treatment for most glaucoma cases. And even cataracts, they do not require any sort of injections. They may sometimes just give steroid or antibiotic injections during or after cataract surgery to reduce any sort of inflammation. But injections are not a typically standard treatment. So I'm not too sure what the underlying cause of them giving you that injection was. But more than likely, that is not the reason for the you're not being able to see out of that eye. What could be causing it is that the glaucoma has progressed to a certain stage. And what I would say is make sure and go and get your eyes checked out as immediately as you can.
All right, one more before we turn back to our topic. Is it normal to use the toilet 3 to 4 times a day following a colorectal resection? And approximately how many weeks is the average length of time before things get back to normal?
So this is a very complicated question because, of course, each person is different. And, of course, it is going to be dependent on the person's age, the person's prior medical history, how active the person was before that colorectal resection, and on top of that, many other factors, like if there was any sort of complication in the surgery, what type of colorectal resection they had, did this person have a stoma, did that stoma have to be reversed? There are many different things that we have to take into consideration. So each person is different. Each individual is different. Your bowels will be inactive at first because of the anesthesia and the handling of the intestines. And you may pass gas, which is a good sign before your first bowel movement. But you will not usually pass bowel movements until about 2 to 5 days after your surgery. After discharge, like say 1 to 2 weeks after your surgery, your stool consistency may vary from loose to constipated. The frequency may also fluctuate. So some people, like this person, may pass stool 3 times a day, or some people may pass stool more than that, or twice a day, or less than that. And of course, you may return to normal. And when I say normal, it's not going to be like it was before because you've had a part of your colon resected. But it may return to normal. And again, this is dependent on the person. And I'm trying to give like a very generalized view here. Within about a month post-surgery, once there was no complications, and you definitely have to consider your diet after that. You need your hydration, your fiber, and of course, gentle movement to help to restore that bowel function. You need to avoid any sort of straining and report any sort of bowel blockage that you may have. So if you're not experiencing any gas or bloating, any gas or or passing of stool. And if you're bloated, you're feeling nauseous, or you're vomiting, you definitely need to go back to your doctor. And again, you may resume that normal toilet use within the next week or two.
All right, so let's get back to our topic of PR. No worry, folks. Any questions that we didn't get through today, we'll definitely get through with them tomorrow. So what types of investigations might a doctor recommend to find the cause of PR bleeding, like a colonoscopy or stool test?
So depending on the presentation of the person, we may just suggest a digital rectal exam or a sigmoidoscopy or even a full colonoscopy to visualize the colon lining itself. And then stool tests like the fecal occult blood test or the fecal immunochemical test, that may help us to detect any sort of hidden blood if we suspect that that is what the person is experiencing. And of course, in some cases, there's imaging that can be done, like a CT colonography or a capsule and endoscopy. Those things may be used, especially when we are suspecting any sort of small bowel pathology. And the choice of any of these tests is going to be dependent on many different things. So the patient's age, what symptoms are they experiencing? What risk factors do they have? What is their medical condition? What is their family history? So what tests we order for a particular person is going to be dependent on that detailed medical history that we're taking, where they present their symptoms and what they have been experiencing, and of course, a physical exam of that patient as well.
And is PR bleeding always diagnosed visually, or are there blood or imaging tests that help?
So the visual methods, like the colonoscopy or the sigmoidoscopy, they basically provide direct confirmation and an opportunity to perform a biopsy. For example, if we do a colonoscopy and we notice that there's a tumor or some sort of growth, we can take a piece of that tissue and do a biopsy one time. But the other diagnostic tools that we do have available are very much valuable as well. So the blood tests, we may do a CBC and it may reveal that this person has anemia because they are experiencing chronic blood loss and there's no visual signs of bleeding. So that is when we may order a fecal occult blood test or the FIT or the fecal immunochemical test, because there may be hidden blood that is being lost that we do not see. And of course, imaging studies like a CT angiography, that can actually detect active bleeding in the bowel itself. And if the source of the bleeding is unclear, sometimes there's something called a nuclear medicine scan where we have tagged red blood cell scans, and that may also be used to detect where the source of that bleeding is coming from. So PR bleeding is definitely approached through a combination of a detailed medical history, a physical exam of that patient, imaging, and even lab tests as well. And if we're suspecting somebody has something like colon cancer, or if we have diagnosed colon cancer, we can even do a CEA test for surveillance. So usually that is high in a person that has colon cancer. It is not a marker that diagnoses colon cancer, but what I mean by that is that it really helps to detect if the tumor is no longer there or if it has shrunk, because the value of that CEA after treatment is going to go down. But again, it's not used to diagnose, it's just used for surveillance. So yes, the other tests, like the blood tests or the imaging tests, they definitely do have a beneficial role to play when we are diagnosing patients.
And is PR bleeding always diagnosed visually, or are there blood or imaging tests that help?
So we just discussed this one, but just for the people that may not have heard it, the visual methods, like the colonoscopy, the sigmoidoscopy, they definitely give us a direct confirmation and visualization of the tumor, and that by itself can be used to diagnose this person with whatever the test confirms. But again, the blood tests, the CT angiography, these things do have a very beneficial role to play in diagnosing, as well as treating and surveillancing that treatment of that person.
And if the bleeding is from hemorrhoids or other causes, what home remedies or treatments can help safely?
So if it is hemorrhoids, sitz baths, soaking that area in warm water, even topical ointments with lidocaine and hydrocortisone, or even over-the-counter suppositories, and stool softeners, they tend to help to relieve these symptoms. And of course, what we were discussing, your diet and your exercise and your hydration, increasing your fiber intake, your fluid intake, all of these things help to prevent straining, and avoiding prolonged sitting on the toilet and using moist wipes instead of dry toilet paper. All of these things can help to reduce irritation in that area. And if these do not help, then a doctor may recommend like banding for hemorrhoids, or even prescription ointments for the anal fissures themselves.
And finally, what are some tips for preventing PR bleeding, especially for people with a history of piles, constipation, or digestive issues?
So for persons that may never have experienced PR bleeding, there are certain things that you can do to ensure that you prevent any sort of PR bleeding in the future. And for persons who have experienced it as well, these tips are also going to be helpful to not create any sort of relapse into PR bleeding again. So prevention is going to start with maintaining soft, regular bowel movements, and that is going to include eating a fiber-rich diet, about 25 to 30 grams per day, and drinking a lot of water, about 2.5 to 3 liters per day, and exercising regularly to get those bowel movements and to get that GI motility going. You want to avoid straining or delaying your bowel movements as well, and address any sort of chronic constipation as promptly as you can. For people who do have piles or hemorrhoids, you want to avoid prolonged sitting, and even consider using like a footstool to align your colon properly during your bowel movements. And it is essential to have your routine screenings, especially after the age of 45. All of these things are going to be critical for early detection of more serious causes like colon cancer.
All right, we have just about 4 minutes. Let's see if we could ask and answer some of those questions that came in. All right, let me see here. Good day, Doc. Even when I get sufficient sleep at night during the course of the day, I would feel tired, lethargic, and sleepy. Advice, please.
So, remember, when we talk about sleep, a lot of the time, yes, you can get sufficient sleep in terms of the amount of time, but your sleep quality may not be the best. So there are ways that you can help to improve your sleep quality. And one of those ways is making sure that you address any sort of stressful events that may be going on in your life. Remember, any sort of stress basically dysregulates your nervous system because it creates an inflammatory process within the body, and it may take away from the quality of your sleep. You need to also master your sleep routine. Go to bed, wake up at the same time every day, even on the weekends. Create a wind down ritual. Dim your lights, no screens, light stretching, calming music about 30 to 60 minutes before bed. Keep your bedroom cool and dark and quiet, and use your bed only for sleep and not for your phone or your work or any sort of TV. You need to optimize your diet and your activity as well. So avoid any sort of caffeine after 2 p.m. And of course, avoid any sort of heavy meals 2 to 3 hours before bed. Daily exercise is also going to help. And make sure that, you know, avoid any stressful activities close to bedtime, any emails, any intense conversations, and try deep breathing, meditation, and journaling, and supplements only if needed, and of course approved by a doctor. So magnesium glycinate, some people use ashwagandha or valerian root, and if you're sleeping enough hours but you still feel tired, or if you snore or you wake up gasping, or if you have restless legs, you definitely may have an underlying condition like sleep apnea or an insomnia disorder. So it definitely is worth it doing a sleep study. Some people may get enough sleep, but they're not getting restful or good quality sleep.
All right, we do have some more questions, but not enough time. We'll try to get to them tomorrow. So, Doctor, this is where we sign off for today, and many thanks.
See you tomorrow.
All right, folks. So once again, you've been listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Of course, we thank everybody for their interest, their questions, and calls. Remember to tell a friend to tell a friend. The Lunchtime Doctor is heard every Monday to Wednesday right here on Freedom 106.5 FM.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.